Hello, welcome to the Melanin Initiative, the premier nursing podcast made specifically for you. Yes, you. We know your time is valuable and something you can't get back, so we want to help you navigate the complicated healthcare world from our perspective without giving you too much information at once, hence the name TMI. So let's begin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Melanin Initiative. Today's episode is our Juneteenth special episode, and we'll be talking about intergenerational trauma. Today's episode is actually is a special episode to us as we have our first guest. We're honored to introduce to you and speak with licensed therapist Kelsey Wilson, and she's here to talk to us about the historical context of intergenerational trauma. I know this episode, it seems a little different from our previous episodes as we were missing our colleague, Alicia. She is currently at a family reunion, so she sends her love, but she won't be with us today, but she'll be with us with on our future episodes. But once again, we are honored to have Kelsey with us today. The reason that this episode matters to us is because accessing mental health care can feel quite overwhelming for many people. Navigating mental health stigma and identifying a therapist that is a good fit can be a challenge. In this episode, we will focus on solutions to addressing barriers to care, the benefits of mental health treatment, and ways we can reduce mental health stigma within Black and Brown communities. I do want to note that this show is for educational purposes only. The opinions expressed are our opinions alone, and they are not a representation of any of our affiliations. If you are experiencing a medical emergency, you should seek medical attention and medical guidance from your healthcare provider. Now to switch gears here, as usual, we always want to discuss our TMI takeaways or the key points that we hope you learn by the end of the episode. The first is understanding the definition and key contributing factors of intergenerational trauma. We want to explain how intergenerational trauma impacts Black and Brown communities, identify how we can reduce mental health stigma, and promote positive mental health outcomes in the community, as well as we want to discuss why clinicians of color matter in the mental health field. Before we start our conversation, Kelsey, please tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and how people can find you.
Yes, yes. And first and foremost, thank you so much for having me on the episode today. I'm so excited to be here. Like you said, my name is Kelsey Wilson. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I'm currently in private practice. I specialize in working with women with anxiety, depression, burnout, life transition issues, and a lot of different family dynamic concerns as well. I also see men and members of the LGBTQ community as well. My practice is 100% telehealth, and I serve clients within the state of Virginia. So I'm really excited to be here today to be able to talk about trauma and ways that we can work towards recovery.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Kelsey. We're so elated to have you on this episode. I know we're going to learn just as much from the audience. When thinking about, you know, what to do for this episode, we really didn't want to do the traditional route because find that information everywhere. So this is really a special treat for not only us, but for the audience, because I can't even tell you the last time I heard someone use that definition, that term, intergenerational trauma. So we're really in for a special treat, and we thank you for spending your Saturday with us. All right. So Kelsey, please, can you just define what is intergenerational trauma?
Definitely, definitely. Well, with this episode being featured the week of Juneteenth, I feel we would be remiss if we didn't discuss the ripple effects of oppression on the minority community and how it impacts the community today. So intergenerational trauma is defined as a trauma or a set of traumas that impact a family or a subgroup of individuals. Juneteenth specifically was federally acknowledged as a holiday in 2021. However, it was established as an annual commemoration of the end of slavery in the United States after the Civil War, and it's been celebrated by African Americans since the late 1800s. So when we talk about Juneteenth and the significance of the day, it's important to acknowledge that it's a celebration of freedom. And I also feel it's important to talk about trauma because the two go hand in hand as we reflect on our history.
Wonderful. How does intergenerational trauma impact the Black community in 2023?
Definitely. So from my personal experience, it shows up in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of beliefs that when it comes to how trauma should be addressed in the Black community and within communities of color. So within the community, I believe that, you know, some individuals may think that what happens within the household stays within the household, or if it's a trauma that's happened in the past, it should stay in the past. But this mentality sometimes stems from a place of trauma and the belief that we have to suffer in silence. This leaves some to believe that they have to self-soothe, and that can lead to unhealthy behaviors and avoidance. And unfortunately, from my experience, it prevents many from feeling comfortable with accessing mental health care. So many of my clients that I see are the first ones in their family to seek therapy. And that can be a scary place when there have been decades of sexual abuse or physical, emotional abuse within their families. There's anxiety that comes from stepping outside of the box and doing something different. And that anxiety can be so overwhelming at times that people feel they have to hide the fact that they're seeking therapy. So in my practice, I really focus on supporting my clients with this specific issue, because it can be a great deal of challenge to be able to get in therapy and stay in therapy.
Yeah, what you said about whatever state what happens in the house stays in the house. I definitely grew up in a home like that. You know, to my parents' credit, as they've gotten older, they have definitely, you know, adjusted that mindset. But it's very prevalent in our community.
Definitely.
What is mental health stigma as it pertains to the Black community?
Mental health stigma is defined as a form of discrimination against those who are suffering with a mental health condition. This form of discrimination can be intentional and unintentional at times and be a direct result of a lack of empathy, knowledge, understanding of mental health conditions. Mental health stigma is a common issue that's becoming more widely discussed on a national and global level, which is great. The implications of mental health stigma in the Black community are that many may be discouraged to seek therapy or not feel supported if they start. And this unfortunately can lead to poor mental health outcomes as a result.
So how do we promote positive mental health outcomes within Black and Brown communities if that's such an issue?
Definitely. So from my personal experience, the first step is providing psychoeducation on what common mental health conditions consist of, ways that we can treat these conditions in a healthy way, and the benefits of doing so. From there, the next step is providing education on the implications of not addressing mental health concerns when needed. In some circumstances, you know, when people go untreated, they often feel worse over time, experience severe depression, self-esteem issues, isolation, self-harm, suicide attempts, and in some cases, hospitalization. That's why it's so imperative that we talk about therapy early and often within the community. I feel it's important that we teach positive mental health awareness in schools and continue that messaging at home for future generations and how we can make a positive impact in the future.
I agree. You know, this is a health literacy podcast. So one of the things we aim to do is to break down medical language or medical jargon into words that people can understand. So you mentioned a term, psychoeducation. Can you just break that down for our audience?
Definitely. So psychoeducation is education on mental health concerns, issues, and like also positive coping skills that can help someone who is experiencing a mental health concern. And I think we should also talk about psychoeducation in terms of integrating it into our day-to-day. So sometimes when we're learning about coping skills, it's not just when we're feeling really depressed or when we're feeling really anxious. It should be something that we integrate into our self-care and also talking with our friends and family about on a regular basis.
You know, that's wonderful. So, you know, our children these days, they have learned under a lot of stress, and we talk to them about coping mechanisms all the time. So if they're listening, how would you explain what coping mechanisms are?
Yes. So coping mechanisms are, well, I'll explain it in two ways, because there can be healthy coping mechanisms and there can be unhealthy coping mechanisms. So when we talk about unhealthy coping mechanisms, they can sometimes be things that we do in excess, whether that be drinking or overeating or undereating, could be things like substance use or restricting other things that might be healthy or sleeping in excess. So those are all like coping skills that sometimes aren't the best for us. But then when we talk about healthy coping skills, they could be things like exercising in a reasonable amount of exercise, eating healthy foods that make our bodies feel good, talking to friends when we're feeling down or when we're feeling happy, both, or just seeking things that make us feel comfortable in ways that are healthy, going for a walk, drinking water, making sure that we're hydrated, things like that, listening to music, you know, doing the things that we really enjoy, watching movies. Those are all healthy. materials.
Geraldine, feel free to jump in. This is, we're really at the kitchen table. You know, we just happen to be the really wide kitchen tables. So a few things you brought up, and I hope you don't mind me deterring a little bit here. So you mentioned excessive sleep. So I have a lot of my friends, they have teenagers, and their teenagers sleep quite a bit. So how would that parent distinguish normal adolescent growth spurts and exhaustion from, you know, having to grow up versus actually going through some kind of mental health, you know, crisis?
So for me, I would say, you know, I have a lot of clients that I see who are parents, and sometimes that can be a concern. Like, you know, is my child going through a mental health concern, or are they more so just, you know, isolating because they're going through puberty? And so it's important to really be asking your child questions related to how they're doing socially, how they're doing in the academic setting, and if they feel like they need anything. Because then when you start to have those conversations on a normal basis, it starts to normalize, okay, is this something that I should be more concerned about? Or is this more so they're going through puberty and they kind of just want space? And then that can kind of help us figure out where we're at with things. It's also important to kind of know your child's patterns too. Like, is this something that's new and you want to be a little bit more cautious of what's going on, or is this something that's been going on for a while and you just need to give your child some space?
Wonderful. That was very helpful. The other thing you mentioned that all clinicians, we all come in contact with, a lot of the reason we're even seeing patients is because of what we're putting in our mouth. And you mentioned eating foods that make us feel good. So so that is a struggle, right? Because when I say eat foods that make you feel good, I'm thinking fruits and vegetables because they give you energy. They don't slow you down. They don't put you to sleep right away. They don't increase your blood pressure. But people also find that comfort foods make them feel good, right? They help soothe the stress. They help remind them of previous memories of loved ones. So how do you navigate that conversation?
Definitely. So one of the things that I do is integrate holistic wellness into my practice. So when clients see me, we're talking about their mental health, but we're also talking about healthy habits related to exercise and nutrition. And so I'm always asking questions like, have you gotten your annual physical? Are you keeping up with your doctor's recommendations, whether that be for medication or dietary needs? And then we kind of talk about how we can integrate that into their treatment plan. Because oftentimes when we aren't taking care of our physical health and eating the foods that are healthy for our bodies, there can be side effects that impact our mental health as well.
That's wonderful. You mentioned holistic care. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with holistic care, so even though Kelsey is a you're going to see her for counseling, she cares about your whole body, right? She cares that you're able to sleep. She cares that you have reliable transportation. She cares that you have access to healthy food and plenty of clean water. That's what we consider holistic care. And you see a lot of medicine and nursing is moving in that direction. It's been moving in that direction. One of the specialties that's really known for that is called integrative medicine or functional medicine. And so you're likely to hear a lot more of that coming from healthcare as well as this platform. And then I think there was one more thing you mentioned that I wanted to touch on. It might come back to me. How does being a clinician of color in mental health field impact access to mental care?
Definitely. So I love this question because I'm a huge advocate for representation in all fields, especially as it pertains to stigma and therapy. Many of my clients have expressed interest in working with a clinician that they knew would understand some of the concepts that we talked about today, such as like racial diversity, oppression, barriers to treatment, and other cultural considerations from a firsthand perspective. So having the comfort level to pursue treatment and open up plays a huge role in mental health outcomes. Racial trauma is also an open topic of discussion with my clients, and I fully support talking about that topic in therapy as it may arise. I find that with the integration of cultural considerations into clients' care, it allows the client and the clinician to build a stronger rapport with better outcomes as a result in therapy. In my practice, I primarily focus on working with women and self-empowerment in the majority of the work that I do. And I offer trauma-informed, solution-focused therapy while my practice is 100% virtual. So I'd like to share, if you're listening today and you're in need of a therapist in Virginia, or you know someone who does, please feel free to contact me. But there are so many ways to access mental health treatment, regardless of where you live. So if you have insurance, you can contact member services on the back of your insurance card to obtain a list of in-network providers. You can use online directories to access care. Or if you have an employee assistantship program benefit through your job or a family member's job, you can access solution-focused short-term care that way. There's also a number of self-pay options for those who are uninsured or simply don't want to use their insurance benefits. And if you have a flexible spending account or a health savings account, you can use that as a way to offset the out-of-pocket expense for therapy because it's an eligible health expense. So if you have a provider that you want to see who's out of network with your insurance and you want to see that provider because of their specialty area, those out-of-network benefits are able to help in that way. Insurance companies can answer questions like, what is my deductible? Do I have an out-of-pocket cost for coverage for mental health care? And just for the audience listening today, we'll have some practices in the area that are accepting new clients. So if you would like to explore those, you're welcome to. And lastly, in the event that you're ever experiencing a mental health emergency, you can call 988-911 or go to your nearest emergency room.
Wonderful. You mentioned integrating cultural considerations into your practice. What does that mean and what does that look like?
Definitely. So I always ask in the beginning of treatment when I'm working with clients if there are any cultural considerations that they would like integrated into their services with me. So sometimes people have certain traditions, whether that's from where they're from, their country of origin or their family background, that they really value and hold close to their heart. And that impacts the way that they want to navigate treatment or the way that they want to be treated by providers. And so it's important as mental health professionals and providers in general to just ask that question so that we can be culturally sensitive to the way that clients would like us to provide care.
You know, I ask that question a lot too. And oftentimes I find that if the patient is, say, from a different country, they know exactly what to tell me. They know exactly what those considerations are. But I find that if they're from America, they're really confused about what I'm asking when I use the word cultural considerations. How would you answer that?
Sure. So for that, when I have clients who may be confused about that question, I'll just ask them about, I'll bring it back to their nuclear family and asking them, like, what are some rituals or traditions or things that your family really valued? And that kind of helps clients to be able to answer that question when I say cultural considerations, because usually they can pull something out related to the foods that they ate or the expectations that their parents had or routines or activities that they did. And then we can kind of integrate it into the conversation a little bit better.
Excellent. So I just learned about 988. And we know there are a lot of people listening who may also be unfamiliar. Can you tell us a little bit more about 988 and the importance of having access to mental health emergency services versus just calling the police?
Definitely. So 988 is a suicide and crisis prevention line that helps individuals across the United States who are experiencing a mental health emergency. So instead of just calling the police, you will be connected to a provider, an assistant who can understand mental health concerns directly, and they'll be able to help de-escalate or provide you with assistance from a mental health perspective. Of course, if 911 is the first number that pops into your mind, please call it because they can get you help and have a wellness check if you need that. But if you would like to learn more, if anybody listening on the call today would like to learn more, you can visit 988lifeline.org for more details.
Wonderful. You talked about the barriers or reasons people don't seek care in our community. As a clinician of color, female entrepreneur, and licensed therapist, can you describe what a session with you is like from the moment someone visits your website to after an appointment if they want to follow up and see you again?
Definitely. So for those who visit my website, they're able to see my consultation request page where they can book a free 15-minute consultation call with me. When that appointment happens, I speak with the client about what they're hoping to gain from therapy. And I talk about my specialty areas and how I can assist. If they are feeling like they would like to proceed and it's a good clinical fit, then I'll send them intake paperwork for them to provide me with information related to their care. And from there, we'll have our first initial appointment via telehealth, where we'll do a biopsychosocial assessment and a treatment plan that's tailored to their needs. From there, we'll have either weekly appointments or biweekly appointments in the beginning. And then as they proceed through treatment and they're doing better, then we move to the maintenance phase. So we'll see each other once a month.
Real quick, since you're doing telehealth, does the patient, your client, have to be also physically located in Virginia?
Yes, yes. So all of my clients are located in the state of Virginia during the telehealth appointments. And that is across the board. So if you have a client who's in another state, they would see a provider that's licensed for that particular state.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. So we definitely touched on a lot of things today. And obviously, feel free to rewatch any of the episodes, because we know that this was we touched on a lot of factors this episode, so feel free to rewatch if you need to, pause, rewind, and ask as many questions as you need to in the comments or via email. Today, just to wrap up, we talked about intergenerational trauma, and we learned the key, the definition and key contributing factors to intergenerational trauma. Now we can explain how intergenerational trauma impacts Black and Brown individuals. We learned ways to reduce mental health stigma and promote positive mental health outcomes in our community. And we can comfortably and confidently talk about why clinicians of color matter in the mental health field. Please check the description box for some links of links on intergenerational trauma, how to find a provider, and links to therapists accepting new clients located in DC, Maryland, and Virginia. We have thoroughly enjoyed having Kelsey Wilson on today. She added a richness to the conversation and truly did justice to simplifying what intergenerational trauma means and how it is impacting our community. This is just the beginning of our partnership, so we look forward to seeing more of her on this platform in seasons to come. Please follow her and tell her all of your friends about her. If you're local to the DMV area, definitely check out her private practice. Follow us on Instagram and feel free to email us with questions or suggestions, and we'll address them via social media and as well as in future episodes. In healthcare, there's often too much information and not enough time. Here at the Melanin Initiative, we avoid TMI by breaking down things into language you can understand. We create a safe space to ask your questions and share our nursing perspective without taking too much of your time. Thanks for tuning in. Join us every week for TMI Tuesdays. Thank you for watching. And thank you, Kelsey, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode and we didn't give you too much information. Join us next Tuesday at 10 for a new episode of the Melanin Initiative.